Nosotras las mujeres ese día nos sentimos muy contenta y tranquila y un corazón fuerte por verlos muchos de diferentes estaturas, colores como el maíz, que hay color amarillo, negro, blanco, pero todos somos una sola humanidad.
Bienvenidos a Radio Prensa Pobre, radio para el pueblo, del pueblo en la lucha. Welcome to Poor News Network Radio, radio for the people, by the people in struggle. Ahí en muteado con voces de migrantes en resistencia, en studio with mi hermana carnala, Pabri Mama Scala, Tiny, y Joe.
In honor of the 20th anniversary of the Zapatistas in Chiapas, we are launching a series of segments dedicated to all landless people, worker-led, indigenous peoples-led movements trying like us at Poor Magazine to self-determine our future, and a conversation with a member of the Zapatista Support Committee.
Our fight in Poor Magazine as poor people-led, indigenous people-led movement in the United States of America is constant. We align ourselves and stand and take strength from other landless people movements, working-led movements across Mother Earth. In this 20th anniversary of the Zapatista Rising in Chiapas, we will honor, learn from, and speak with compañeros across Mother Earth. In the first segment, we will feature the Zapatistas. On the phone with us is compañero Arnoldo Garcia from the Comité de Apoyo de Chiapas, and Poor Magazine owns Mayan Scala and Community Revolutionary from Mayab, Vinia Castro. Okay, so again we have on the line Arnoldo Garcia from the Comité de Apoyo de los Zapatistas. Arnoldo, can you start out by telling us the reason why the uprising of Zapatistas?
Well, the Zapatistas began forming in 1983 in an indigenous community, and they had tried everything to bring about the changes they wanted and nothing worked. So they decided, you know, for a long time that they were going to change the relationship they had with the Mexican state. And then the final trigger was that in 1993, the United States, Mexico, and Canada signed the North American Free Trade Agreement, and the Zapatistas decided that they were going to lead an uprising on January 1st of 1994, 20 years ago. And that's what happened, right? Because they considered NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, a death sentence for indigenous people. And it turned out all but true. Even though the actual war between the Zapatistas and the Mexican government lasted 13 days, since then there's been wholesale repression. There's a massive drug war. About 100,000 people have been killed. 25,000 people have disappeared. And probably the safest place in Mexico right now is Zapatista territory that they control in Chiapas. I think they control about two-thirds of Chiapas, the state of Chiapas. They have 8 county governments, or they call them caracoles, and they're building autonomous communities. And autonomy just means, in a simple way, self-determination, and also that they determine the relationship they have to the state. And that relationship means that they don't want nothing to do with the government at this point, that they don't accept any investments, any services, any infrastructure, no doctors, no lawyers, no congressmen, no nothing from the government, that they determine their own way. And they've been at it for 20 years, and they really have been successful. They have their own medical system. They have their own autonomous education system. Women no longer look down when they talk, either in public or with men particularly. It's been a really big change that people have seen in the country because of the Zapatistas. And indigenous people in Mexico have always led the revolution since the day of independence. It was led by Indians and ex-slaves. And then the 1910 revolution was again also started by workers, peasants, and Indians. And then this last round, right, to change the world, really to change the world, is, again, indigenous people have risen up and said no to free trade, to neoliberalism, and they're saying we have to have a different relationship between us here in Mexico and also from Mexico to other countries.
So, you know, as poor people here, multiracial, multinationed, multilingual on this stolen indigenous territory, you know, known as America, quote-unquote, or United Snakes of America, KKK, you know, what's on our backs is this incarceration, this police abuse, this endless profiling. It's all enmeshed with, you know, what we call development and real estate snaking. We're just talking to elders who are just being kicked out of 43 years in their apartments. It's a little different, and yet we align ourselves with folks like the Shack Dwellers Union in South Africa and the Zapatista movement. But, of course, those are their ancestral lands, yeah? And these are not, you know, these are stolen territories. And it's an interesting and difficult paradox, you know, because of what the way we have to move. And so I'm just curious, and I want to bring Vinya into the conversation as a Mayan young woman, you know, fighting, and also as one of our family at Poor Magazine, but also working with Mayab. How do you reflect on the way that this you know, actually plays out in this stolen indigenous territory, Ohlone people's territory called Oakland and San Francisco?
I think that it creates, and thank you for having me today, I think it creates this kind of more motivation to keep going and existing and still maintaining some type of cultural tradition within the United States. And the Bay Area is the largest, has the largest population of Mayans living outside of the Mayan lands. Whether it's Chiapas, Yucatan, Guatemala, Honduras, Salvador, Belize, they're here. And the Fruitvale and the Soma area, Tenderloin area, where the epicenters are at. So, you know, it's beautiful to know that there is a lot of Native peoples here from all over the world. And it's also beautiful to know that we can use our languages, which are mostly Mam and Yucateco Maya. And the Zapatista uprising does give us, like, more agency, a stronger voice worldwide, because for most of history we've been thought as anthropological Indians. You know, we were extinct after we built those pyramids. But a lot of anthropologists, a lot of historians, a lot of educators, you know, people from intellectual institutions forget that after we left these centralized governments, we actually realized that we didn't support centralized governments. We are actually more anarchist. We are actually more about autonomy and keeping our own tradition, whether it's like city-states or comités or caracoles in the sense of Zapatistas. And that's why there's so many of us that speak different languages. And that's why, you know, we take up vast lands to this day, including up here in North America.
I don't know, Norlo, you want to kick in some or share some of your...
Yeah, I mean, the one of the big challenges, as the previous two speakers said, you know, is that we're all displaced people. And that creates a whole different way that we have to seek out the original peoples here, how we support the Ohlones in the Bay Area, how we support the Maya who are also here in the Bay Area, how we support the Maya back home, how we support, you know, whether it's Lakota or Yakama or any of the diverse indigenous nations that still are alive and thriving in North America. We have to figure out, well, what is our relationship? How do we make proposals about changes? And that's one of the things that Zapatistas figured out among themselves, right? They have a principle called we propose, we don't impose. And they don't just do it locally or in Chiapas, they do it internationally. Even when after the war, after the fighting subsided back in March or in February of 1994, the first thing they did is they convened a National Democratic Convention, and they invited people from all over the world to come and say, tell us what you think of our situation. How do we get out of this? And then out of that, they came up with a proposal called the San Andres Accords. And it was actually an accord, a treaty that they won with the Mexican government, but the Mexican government has never upheld it or implemented it. And it gave that treaty called the San Andres Accords gave the Indian people automatic power in this Congress and the Senate and House of Representatives. It also gave them their own budget, and it gave them control over their own lands and resources. But, of course, that was a revolution, right, that really changed. And the Zapatistas have always consulted both with their own people first and then with their allies and their partners after that. And they've done it consistently. And I think that's one practice that we have to have here among the left or among indigenous communities or non-indigenous communities, for that matter, is how we propose and not impose, how we follow by obeying the community, how we develop each other's individual talents in service of the community. But that's a really big proposition for the Zapatistas, right? They started in 1974. In 1980, they decided to form their own Liberation Army. So nothing is working. We have to figure out how we're going to free ourselves. And then when the North American Free Trade Agreement, which was another big displacement of millions of people in Mexico and the Southwest, they said, this is it. This is either we fight to live how we want to live, or we're going to die the way somebody else wants to die. So they've been really consistent, right? And that's something that I look up to them a lot, because it's something that we have to also practice. How are we going to be consistent with our principles? How are we going to be consistent with our communities, make it being that they're a community of communities? And that's a really big challenge. We speak many different languages. We have many different experiences, and we might have different demands, and they all might mean the same thing, so we have to learn how to listen to ourselves more.
Well, I just think one of the beautiful things that's happening, and I think in the 2000, and also the census show that more and more people are identifying themselves as indigenous, right? When we're taught from the places that we come from, that to be ashamed of your Indian blood, you know, there's this new consciousness, you know, that's happening amongst communities. And I want to thank you and Binia, you know, to also organizing and participating in these communities. But what do you guys think about that more and more of this consciousness of people, even mestizo people who before were identified as European descendants, now actually acknowledging their indigenous heritage?
I think it has to do a lot with like being much more open and being like upfront. I think Zapatistas did a great job of kind of like, this is who we are, and we're not ashamed of being indigenous, and we're not ashamed of being Indian. There's nothing to be ashamed of. And more people are taking up that, you know, that momentum and that the beauty of being Native and indigenous. And, you know, I think it's empowering to know that you come from a pueblo, you come from a cafetal, you come from a cornfield, and there's nothing wrong with that. And you speak your native languages, and it's not a dialect, it's a language that comes from roots, and it comes from a region, it comes from a long line of ancestors. You know, so I think it's a beautiful thing that our children are maintaining here in here in San Francisco, in the Mayab and Native American Health Center. We do promote our kids to speak their languages, and we do have classes to promote their languages. And it's just that we want our kids to be as multilingual as possible. We have children who speak more than one Mayan language, plus English and Spanish. We want them to keep their roots, but still be, you know, functional in the United States, but always know that they have a home in the South, and that's where the ancestors come from.
That's beautiful. We're going to have to cut it because we only have a little bit of time. I wanted to thank you both for being on the air with us. You know, I mean, the way that we're moving with homefulness is rooted in our poverty and also in indigenismo, because we have nothing. We're the people that people kick to the curb, incarcerate, and put in shelters, and would rather never see us or hear us again. And so the power and the spirit of the humility and the respect from the Zapatistas, from the Shack Dwellers Union in South Africa, Landless Peoples Movement in Brazil, all of our movements that are not taking this continuation of neoliberalism and the perpetration of more lies on our back. I think that's really what we're really trying to get out there. So thank you both for being on the air with us.
Gracias.
Thank you. Gracias.
Talk more.
Ayer nació un caracol, un caracol de guerra, en plena selva madre del sur.